And hello, everyone, and welcome to Beyond the Matrix, the program that asks you to think outside the box of convention and explore the free thought zone where we really soar with the eagles. And this is Patricia Corey, your host. Thank you for tuning in. The last few weeks, we've had some pretty amazing conversations on this program, and I hope you've told some of your friends to tune in and catch up on some of the latest pretty revolutionary information that I can do my best to bring to you. My guest today, his book is called The Revolutionary Trauma Release Process, Transcend Your Toughest Times. I ran into this book and I said, I'd like to have this man on my show. His name is David Berselli. He's a fellow Italiano.
Si, Italiano.
And we'll get to him in just a second. But before I bring David on, I want to just thank you all for all of your feedback on the show, and that hopefully you will tune in, that you will call in again. The station is bbsradio.com. You're listening to it, and you've got the call-in line numbers there. I've got a computer problem at the moment, so I can't feed those numbers out to you. But later on in the show, I'm going to invite you to call in and talk to David with your questions. All right. Let me talk about David Berselli. He's the founder and CEO of Trauma Recovery Assessment and Prevention Services. For 15 years, David has lived and worked in war-torn countries of Africa and the Middle East. Along with individual trauma counseling, he has provided specialized trauma recovery assistance to U.S. military personnel, national and international relief agencies, and government and non-government organizations whose staff are living in and working in trauma-inducing environments. I think this is a man we want to hear from. Thank you, David, for coming on the show.
Oh, thanks a lot, Patricia, for the invitation. I appreciate it.
Well, you know, it's definitely a traumatic time on the planet. No matter how much we find our balance as spiritual people and intend that we're going to stay in that higher consciousness, unquestionably, we know we are confronting humongous change on this planet, and we really have a time of it dealing with the daily bombardment of crises that are happening at the global level and, of course, therefore, at the personal level. So I would like to start out by talking about that and how you see the overall consciousness on this planet with regard to the trauma that we are all facing as residents of 21st century planet Earth.
Well, there's something that's very interesting about the word trauma, because most people are afraid of it or don't like it or insist that this hasn't happened to them. But what I'm trying to do is actually normalize this word, because for the entire history of the human species, we've been constantly traumatized. We're a living organism on the planet, just like a plant or any other animal, and just by virtue of living on the planet, it is our nature to be traumatized. And I like us to understand that trauma isn't some horrible obstacle that we may have to encounter. It can also be something that helps us evolve, actually, as a species, because every species on the planet has experienced trauma. However, every species that is still on this planet has survived and even learned from their traumatic experiences, because if we didn't, we'd be extinct right now. So just by virtue of the fact that humans are still on the planet means that we have been traumatized for our whole time on the planet, but we actually have learned how to evolve from these traumas. So I think even contemporary traumas we're experiencing now, even though we're more aware of them because mass communication, I think it's a natural history on our planet to experience these traumas, although right now there seems to be a particularly difficult time of these traumas, but I think they're powerful potential learning experiences for us as well.
Oh, yeah. In fact, I always tell people when I'm teaching that it seems that humanity really only rises to its ultimate apex when it is confronted with great traumatic moments that require getting ourselves into the power zone and overcoming the trauma.
Yeah, I think you're right, because I think about this a lot, because I travel all over the world to war zones and natural disasters, and what I discover among people is that when they are facing death, which is potentially what trauma does, it causes us to really face life to a very severe degree, I actually begin to see that they begin to question their own life at a deeper level, and that questioning of what is my life for, what is about, what does life mean, that type of questioning actually begins to cause a transformation. And if the transformation is successful, it seems to lead people in the direction of being more compassionate and patient and loving and more accepting of their life on the planet.
Indeed. I'd like to talk about, because your book delves into what actually happens in the body. So can you take us through it, especially since you're working with military, and God knows they're faced with trauma, and can you tell us a little bit about, before we talk about post-traumatic syndrome, is that what it's called?
Post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yeah. Before, I'd like to ask you about that, but before we go to that, I would like to ask you if you can describe for us what physically takes place in the body with regard to the hormonal shifting and the adrenaline surges and everything else when the individual faces a traumatic event.
Well, there are a number of things that take place, and I think the easiest way to understand it would be to know that it happens in the body, it happens in the brain, and it happens in the nervous system. And this is what I mean by that. When the brain perceives that there's something that's life-threatening to it, it begins to generate certain chemicals, and we're familiar with adrenaline and cortisol. Those would be the two major chemicals, and it produces them in high quantities. When it does that, it inserts them into the muscle tissue themselves. This is what helps the muscle tissue produce what we call the fight or flight response, where it becomes very strong and powerful, so you can run faster or fight harder. Or we might even get chemicals that help us dissociate if we can't run or fight from the traumatic event. So you have the neurological process, and you have the physical process, and then the nervous system also reacts as a way of keeping you, in a sense, instinctual in your responses rather than thinking about your responses cognitively. So people act in an instinctual manner. It's both directed by the nervous system and the chemicals that are created through the brain, and then their body responds in a more powerful and dynamic way. So the whole system or the whole organism of the human body changes, and it changes for only one purpose, and that purpose is to guarantee that you survive the traumatic event. It doesn't care what the trauma is. It could be a car accident. It could be developmental trauma. It could be war. It could be a natural disaster. The brain isn't concerned about what is producing the life-threatening event or even what the life-threatening event is. It's only concerned that it figures out the way to help you survive it.
Okay, but what happens after the crisis has passed and the person is not surviving the trauma, I mean, not overcoming the trauma? What is going on that this traumatic experience remains embedded in the cellular memory, I would imagine you would agree, of the individual?
Right. All right. Now, this is where my book comes in and what it is I'm trying to help promote on the planet. In general, animals in the wild, most mammals, experience life or death threats almost daily, meaning they could be caught by another prey or predator and they could be eaten. But they don't have post-traumatic stress disorder like we have. So the question became, why would animals in the wild who are mammals, just like humans are mammals, why would they live in danger and not suffer from PTSD, whereas humans do suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder? And it's that type of research and questioning that I've been involved in. And what I've discovered, as have other researchers, is that mammals in the wild have a natural mechanism to turn off their trauma behavior after the traumatic event is ended and they've returned back to a safe environment. Humans, likewise, have that mechanism built into their body, but we have actually stopped using it. And the method that I promote is reactivating this natural mechanism in the body that actually turns off, if you will, the trauma response after the traumatic event is over, and then helps the person restore themselves back to their natural state of calmness and relaxation.
Okay, I'd like to talk about that a little bit further on in our conversation, is exactly what that is that you teach people. But what I want to know now is, what I'd like to ask you now is, why, how is the body, or how is the, why have human beings forgotten how to release trauma? What has happened in the human experience that we store that traumatic experience and develop things such as post-traumatic syndromes?
Right. The reason that we've done that is we've become socialized beings, which are different in terms of socialized behaviors than most mammal species. And we developed a part of the brain that also is uniquely a human part of the brain where we can think onto ourselves or reflect back onto ourselves. And this part of the brain is where we have what we would call the ego. Now, part of restoring yourself from a traumatic event is allowing yourself to experience the overwhelming emotional or energetic experience of the traumatic event. But our egos don't want to re-experience that. So what we tend to do is we try to put it behind us, pretend it didn't happen, pull ourselves up by our bootstraps and get over it. But what we don't want to do is re-experience the emotional sensation of that traumatic event. So we actually freeze it into the body. And mammals do not do that. Animals in the wild actually allow themselves to feel the full emotional impact of the traumatic event, and then afterwards they allow themselves to feel a full emotional discharge of that traumatic event. And that's why they can restore themselves back to normal, and we continue to carry that experience throughout our whole lives sometimes.
I'm really glad you brought that up, and for the audience that's listening in, I would like to really emphasize this, because in my work as well, I ask people to go into fear and really explore it and allow themselves to feel it, to feel anger, to feel whatever emotion they feel, because often in our spiritual communities, we try to dismiss any kind of lower emotion and just say, but I'm in a place of tranquility and I'm going to let that roll off. But many times that energy gets stored in the body, because it's okay to feel emotion. We came into these physical bodies to experience emotion, in my opinion. And so I think it's really important to strike a balance between being stuck in those difficult emotions and the willingness to allow yourself to feel them and then move through them, as you're describing with the animal kingdom.
Yeah, I think that's a great distinction, because quite frankly, when I work with people, if they allow themselves just to have the experience of the emotion releasing itself from the body, it actually releases rather quickly and easily. It's when they are resistant to letting the body release the emotion because they're afraid to feel it, that they really create, if you will, a barrier, or they dam up the emotion, which contracts the body even tighter. Then what they do, what you're suggesting, is they basically split themselves. So their body has no more sensation, and they escape into their head and say, but I'm peaceful and calm right now, so just leave me alone. And it's not true. What they are is they're dissociated and separated.
Exactly. Exactly. And would you agree that storing these deep emotions and post the emotion of a stress situation, storing it in the body, no doubt, is bad for the immune system. Would you agree with that?
Oh my God, yes. I mean, that's already been proven by medical science a great deal. Over excitation in the body creates a repetition compulsion pattern of too many chemicals being created in the body to the point that we call it adrenal overload, which is being diagnosed very, very much in at least the United States right now, because people's adrenal glands are continually turned on and they are developing excessive amounts of adrenaline and cortisol, which is imbalancing the entire system of the body. So yes, it creates many secondary and even tertiary problems of other illnesses and tensions and anxieties that they now have to begin to take medications for.
So where do we define the place where, on the one hand, it is suppression of emotion, and the other hand, it is turning to meditation or yoga or exercises like in your book to, let's take your exercises out of the book, and let's say going to a place where I'm going to go into meditation now, and so I can let go of this emotion and be in a higher state of mind. Where is the fine line here between allowing yourself to release that emotion versus choosing to, and like you said, be in your head in a sort of escapism approach where you refuse to deal with the emotion and simply go sit under a tree and meditate and contemplate being in a better place?
Well, one of the things that I find that's very difficult in terms of finding this fine line between these two is that we, even in something like a yoga practice, which is pure and beautiful to do, many people go into it with a very ego-driven behavior pattern. So although they're doing their yoga correctly and the poses are right and even their meditation seems powerful, they actually are not feeling the full impact of what's happening in their body emotionally. What I usually find is that when people get closer to their emotions, what they do is they begin to meditate as a way of coming out of the experience and then going into their head so they don't feel the body. Now, this is a little bit difficult to diagnose or to see this process because it's so tricky for people. And what I usually find is that if people are not able to carry a meditative practice throughout the day, meaning a meditative behavior, and that they have difficulty with relationships, but they feel deeply spiritual when they're doing their yoga practice, then there's a split. If their yoga practice is not engaged at the time that they're in tense or difficult situations during their regular lifetime, then that's a real indicator that they have a split between their emotional behavior patterns and their thought patterns of meditation and relaxation.
And so you call that a dissociative state?
Absolutely it is, right. Because what they've done is they've basically split feelings from thought. So the minute they begin having feelings, they race up into their head to try to calm down the feeling rather than just staying with it and breathing through it and see what the feeling has to offer them.
Yeah, I remember when my mother passed through, I was in the deepest mourning and grief that I've ever experienced. And my partner kept saying, come on, you know, I'd like to see you, you know, get out of this and work through, to come back and get over it. And I said, look, my mother died.
Right.
I'm not going to get over it until I'm ready to get over it, until I've screamed and cried it out. And
you know,
I'll let you know when that is.
That's a perfect example, and here's why that is. The human body that we are living in has no need to wallow in emotions or anything like that. But what it does need is it needs to continue to express itself until it's free, and it's free of its emotions.
Right.
And when it's free, it stops. It doesn't keep crying. It doesn't keep whining. It doesn't keep complaining. When it feels alive and happy and free of intense emotions, like the overwhelming grief that you experienced, it stops. It no longer has overwhelming, intense emotions, and it already restores itself. What we're missing is we're living in a human organism that knows how to go through emotions, and it wants to do that. And it wants to do that because it wants to relieve them and restore itself back to a happy, natural state. It knows how to do that automatically. So if we simply follow the organism, it will both lead us into the grief or the emotion, and it will lead us successfully back out of it. It exactly knows how to do that.
Right, but as you say, we're socialized, and it's never really socially correct to air your emotions with people, or even we teach ourselves that it's not good to go through these emotions.
And that's exactly why we suffer from post-traumatic stress.
For the healers that are listening, how many times have you found a client who's got cancer or something that has what I believe is just energy metastasized from not being released?
Right. I think you're right on target there. And science is beginning to prove that cancer cells are often created by other behavior patterns that are unresolved in the body.
Yes, I agree with that. Although there are plenty of factors, but from my work as a healer for so many, many, many years, I would run into cancer and get the client to look at that location where they were feeling the pain or the emotional pain, and bam, once they could explore it, it would always be related to where the cancer had formed.
That's exactly right, yes.
It's amazing stuff. So what is going on with the military and the so-called non-existent post-traumatic syndrome?
Well, it's unfortunate because there are a number of things going on. I'm a Vietnam veteran, so I was in the military many, many years ago. And after Vietnam, many, many soldiers suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder because it was such a difficult life situation in the war there. And so what's happening is we see the same pattern repeating itself. Soldiers are coming back. And they're coming back with post-traumatic stress disorder. But here's one of our socialized behaviors. If they admit to having it, it's considered still a sign of weakness, and many soldiers will not get promoted if they claim that they have PTSD from their war experience, because then they are considered unfit. So that becomes a problem.
Well, not only that, but the military basically denies that it exists.
Well, that's the other issue. They want to deny that it's happening because they need to keep the American public in support of the war. This always needs to happen. They need the American public's backing for the war. And if they knew the number of cases of post-traumatic stress disorder that were returning from Iraq and Afghanistan, there would be a big backlash among the American public, and they would say, we no longer want our servicemen and women in this war. So what they are doing...
Well, I'll drink to that.
Well, yes. The unfortunate thing what they're doing is they're either over-medicating them, and even now it's been well documented, they're medicating them on the battlefield while they even have weapons in their hands, which we never, never did before. And the second thing that they're doing is they're re-diagnosing them with things like bipolar disorder or manic depressive disorder or obsessive compulsive disorder. And then what they can say is that's a pre-existing condition that they had, and therefore they are not responsible for their medical care after they get out of the military. And this has to be the most sinful thing I've ever heard of.
So you're telling me that soldiers are out on the field, dumbed down with Prozac and other antidepressant medications?
Absolutely. That's been in the New York Times and the Washington Post. It's not a secret.
Well, I am a pretty avid... I don't read the news as too terribly much because of all the negativity, but I do keep abreast of what's going on. I never heard that one. That's news for me on Beyond the Matrix today.
Yeah, it's terrible, but it's true. That's what's happening because there are so many people having high anxiety disorders or demonstrating post-trauma symptoms, but they need the military to stay in the field. And so what they've done is they've rewritten their directives, and now they are allowed to medicate people and still put them back on the front lines.
Right, but of course, you know, it doesn't take a genius to figure out that if you need to be acutely aware of everything that's going around you, being dumbed down on Paxil is not a solution.
Right, exactly.
Maybe that's why we can't seem to end these wars.
Well, it's obviously very dangerous at this point, both for the individuals who are carrying the weapons and those who are on the receiving end of those weapons.
Yeah, and including innocent victims of the so-called collateral damage.
Right, exactly.
So what are the symptoms of post-traumatic syndrome disease?
Well, the most
common
symptoms would be...
And then we'll get into what you teach in the book as far as how to deal with stress.
Right. The most common symptoms and the easiest to see would be irritability, as an example, or people who are overstartled easily. These people would then have difficulty sleeping. They would have difficulty with their memory. And all of this suggests that they have high adrenal response in their body, and the body is staying highly activated. So it's never really calming down and relaxing.
I see. And how many, have you worked with this at length with military people?
Yeah, I've worked with about 5,000 military already.
So let's get into the techniques that you teach in the book as to how you help people understand how to work through the body, work through the trauma, and get healed.
Well, the easiest way to describe this is that if you've ever been in an experience that's been traumatizing, anything from a mild car accident to a fight with your spouse or your partner, and you end up saying something like, I was so angry I was shaking, or I was so frightened I was shaking, that shaking mechanism is what I began to address because I saw it a great deal in war zones when I was living in them. And what I began to realize is that this shaking that happens in the body is a natural mechanism that the body activates after a traumatic event. And what it's doing in this process is it's actually trying to calm itself down. When the body is shaking, it's actually trying to reduce the high level of anxiety that it's experiencing in the muscle tissue, and the way to reduce that is actually to tremor the muscles.
So let me just interrupt and ask you a question here, because in my earliest days when I used to go on stage to speak, I would start having that uncontrollable shaking in my knees to the point I thought I was going to collapse.
That's a perfect
So you're talking
example.
About that's an acute adrenaline rush?
Yes, exactly. That's what it is. It's a perfect example that you got so overcharged, so overexcited that the body didn't know what to do with this charge. So it can only do one of two things. It can either begin to tremor, which is its attempt to begin to reduce the high excited charge in the body, or if we don't allow it to tremor, and here's where we get into problems, if we don't allow it to tremor, we will contract the muscle tissue and then hold this excited charge in the muscle, and that's what becomes what you call the cellular memory.
Wow. So and how do we release this?
Okay, so once it's held in the muscle tissue, it then begins to create this chronic pattern of tension, overexcitement, anxiety, being hyper-aroused or overstartled. That's what creates it. It's locked in the muscle tissue itself. So the way to resolve this is to actually go back and use the body's natural mechanism to actually discharge itself. We're genetically encoded with this already. It's already inside the muscle tissue. The body knows how to use it. It's completely organic. So what I did was I designed a series of exercises, very simple ones that anybody could do, and the exercises actually begin to evoke this shaking mechanism in the muscle tissue. And so what the person does after they evoke the mechanism, they simply lay on the floor and the mechanism itself begins to do the work. And what I mean by that is it actually begins tremoring in the muscle tissue, and it begins to like travel throughout muscle groups in the body. So you could feel the tremors beginning in the legs, but as you're laying down, you might feel them then moving up to the pelvis, into the chest, into the neck and shoulders. Wherever there's chronic tension that's being held in the muscle fibers themselves are designed to activate this tremor response to release overcontracted muscle tissue. When it does that, it restores the muscle back to its natural tone, which is its natural state of relaxation and calmness. And so all I did was find a series of exercises to reactivate this mechanism that's already genetically encoded inside the human organism to actually prevent it from storing the traumas in the muscle tissue itself.
How do people recognize that they've got these stored traumas?
Well, many people don't recognize they have it. And a lot of people say to me, well, how do I know if I'm traumatized? And I tell them, I don't know that. I absolutely know
you're traumatized. Sorry if I laugh, but it's kind of funny.
Right. No, it's kind of funny, actually. And then people tell me horrible trauma stories growing up in childhood, and they'll say, do you think this is trauma? And it's just horrible stuff. So we really don't know what trauma is, but I can tell you this for sure. I can tell them, I may not know if you're traumatized, but if you do these exercises, your body will absolutely demonstrate to you if it's still storing trauma. And that's the bottom line. If your body demonstrates it, then you have it in you. And when it releases it, you'll know it's gone and you'll go into a relaxed state. So they can actually prove it to themselves.
So can you take us through the steps that you put people through and described as the trauma release process?
Well, it would be a little bit too complicated to describe the six exercises here on the radio, but the book and the DVD both demonstrate them very clearly, and so people could buy either one of those and learn how to do it. But what I can say is it's a series of exercises that start from the bottom of the feet and work their way up into the chest and shoulder area. And they're systematic in the sense that they start from the feet, and then they go into the calf muscles, then they go into the quadricep muscles, which are in the top part of the leg, then they go into the pelvis and the spine. And so it's a systematic, if you will, a fatiguing of the muscles to actually activate the tremor mechanism so that when they finally finish these six exercises, they can lay down on the floor and the mechanism is activated by itself and they could just lay there. I tell soldiers all the time to watch TV. Don't even pay attention to it because once the mechanism is activated, it works all by itself and it needs no conscious participation on our part.
It's just so, you know, amazing that so few people, so few of us really understand, like you said, the disconnect, realize that the emotion is in every cell of your body, and if you don't let the body work through it, as we said earlier, you really get stuck. All right, I'm going to put out the phone number now, which I finally got back up on my screen. For those of you who'd like to talk in and call in and talk to David about this process and your own experience, here's the toll-free number, 888-815-9756. That's for the U.S. and Canada. Let me give it again, 888-815-9756. Please call in if you've got a question for either me or for David. And take advantage of the opportunity to speak to an expert about letting go of those traumatic memories. Yeah, I'm very interested in the endorphins and the contrasting adrenaline and how amazing it is that the human body really is.
What I think is really important to recognize, again, is that we are living organisms on the planet. This organism already knows how to survive. It knows how to extend its life. It knows how to restore itself and heal itself. All we need to do is continue to use the mechanisms that are already in the body because it knows how to rebalance itself. Once we begin to start putting chemicals in it, or we distort the body's process by saying, I don't want to feel this feeling, or I don't want to think this thought, or I don't want to do this or do that, then we actually disrupt its natural behavior pattern of recovery. And that's when we create the problems for ourselves.
Do you find this is still more common in men who have been more trained than women to be strong and not cry and be tall, be a man and
actually, that's a great question because I try to be very objective, but I actually have found that to be absolutely true. There are a couple of things I found when working different with men and with women. Women, I think it is because you have a menstrual cycle and because you birth children, you are forced, literally, to have to give into your body more often than men do. So no matter how much women continue to try to control their bodies, just as men would try to control it, there are certain behavior patterns in the women that you can't control. And in a sense, you've had to learn how to give into that reality. Whereas men, by and large, can control or believe that we can control our patterns and our emotions. And we are also really trained socially to hold back a great deal of emotion, such as crying or sadness or love or tenderness. And we're actually really trained to be strong and virile and defiant. And that creates severe obstacles, usually in men up around the diaphragm and chest cavity. So a lot of men, particularly soldiers who would be like that, I will often do some hands-on work with them if I'm working with them individually to help release that area of the body. And then they can still have the same response as anybody else in terms of deep activation of these tremors for a nice deep release in the body. But sometimes they need additional attention.
Mm-hmm.
But by and large, I find that the human person really can recover from traumatic events and not only recover, this is always my point, I don't think we just recover from it. If we do it appropriately in our bodies, and we use the body's natural mechanisms to restore ourselves to health after a trauma, I actually believe the body actually learns something from it, and then it's actually more prepared for any future traumatic or stressful events it might encounter.
And what do you say to the question of chronic depression and its relationship to these chemicals being trapped in the body?
Well, without being a medical doctor and without having done a lot of research, there are a number of different reasons for chronic tension. So aside from the medical ones where people might actually have chemical imbalances that unfortunately are natural to their neurological state and that drives them into chronic depression, many people go into chronic depression who have not been able to relieve traumatic experiences from their past. And the attempt to continue to push down and to deny these experiences, even if this may be unconscious, ends up producing behaviors and experiences, if you will, of chronic depression. And so it's often been recognized that people with chronic depression will often have post-traumatic stress or traumatic experiences, usually in early childhood, that might have given way to severe trauma in later adulthood. I mean, severe depression.
So are you suggesting that the process that you use can release traumas that have been embedded from childhood?
Oh, absolutely, because the body doesn't care when it happened. It knows that it wants to release it. So I have people all the time releasing stuff from developmental traumas or early childhoods, even traumas from their birthing process can come out, because remember, it's just a living organism and it's trying to restore itself. So it finds any kind of trauma, whether it's from a car accident or it's from 1 year old of being beaten or being humiliated, it knows how to release itself and restore itself back to health.
And as you say in the book, what can be more traumatic than leaving the warmth and safety of the womb and being pushed and squeezed through this birth canal only to come out and be slapped and welcomed to the craziness of earth life.
Right, exactly. Now, that's a perfect example. Trauma. Unfortunately, birthing is a traumatic event. It is both for the child being birthed as well as for the mother going through the birthing process. Both of them are experiencing trauma. So we know right from our origins of a species that we're going to be traumatized on this planet, and that's one of the first lessons we learn.
Well, what about the possibility of different types of birthing processes, like women who birth in water, and these traumatic events don't take place at the birthing process? Have you had any experience working with these people and noticing or cataloging a different awareness just because of that not happening?
Well, I have worked with some women who have birthed children underwater, and they found it very soothing both for themselves, and they believe they found it soothing for the child as well. And they also believe that the child has a more calm demeanor, because I was speaking with one woman just last week, actually. She birthed one of her children under medication, and the other child, she insisted she wasn't going to be medicated. She was going to birth it in the water with a midwife. And she actually saw a difference in the two demeanors of these two children. Now, what is also interesting is I work a lot in Africa, and women there do not have medication. They actually still birth standing up in a more natural position with midwives, and they actually find that using these tremors, they actually birth easier. But I also found that the women seem to recover faster from the birth process when they actually do it standing up and when they use gravity.
You mean they're standing up on their own? I've heard this before. That they just basically go out in the field, they're standing up on their own power, and they just deliver like that.
Right. They have two women holding them under their arms because they're using gravity, which is how it should have happened in the first place. So the two women hold them under their arms. They squat down. A third woman is catching the child. The child is birthed, and what's interesting, and this is why I bring this up, the mothers then begin to tremor all over their bodies. And when I was teaching these midwives in Tanzania, there were 50 of them, And they laughed at me and said, well, we know this tremor response. We do it all the time when we birth a child. We tremor all over our bodies, and we feel that that's getting the trauma out of our bodies after birth. So they were quite familiar with this. What was interesting...
That's just amazing.
It's amazing. When I was telling this to a neurologist in the United States, he was so excited, he said, if I had the opportunity to research this, he said, I would suspect that women who tremor after the birth process probably do not suffer from postpartum depression. That postpartum depression, by and large, might be part of the process of not tremoring out the trauma of the birthing process, and then it stays stuck in the mother after the child is birthed.
That is very exciting information.
That's very interesting to me as well. I'd never heard of it, and this neurologist was pretty certain that if I did a research, I would probably find that to be true.
And are you going to do it? Because I think that would be invaluable information.
I would love to do it. I need to get women to volunteer, and I need a medical hospital to help me with it. But hopefully one day that'll come.
Tell me, how is it that you have committed your lifetime to helping people in so many different countries? And how did it come about that you dedicated yourself to that?
Well, many years ago, I actually was working as a Catholic relief person while I was living overseas, and I happened to be living in Lebanon at the time, and I was doing war relief efforts with people who are experiencing war there. In that process, I was very severely traumatized, although I didn't know it at the time, and it was only when I returned to the United States I began to show severe symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. Well, I began to be very curious why living in war had any effect on me at all. Why was that different from any other type of life experience? And then I wanted to know, what did it affect me and how did it affect me? So I began studying my own experience from a body level, a psychological level, a spiritual level, and I began to realize that my life was severely altered by confrontations with life and death. Once I went through that amazing realization within myself, I then got very attracted and drawn to working with people who experienced life at that intensity. So I wanted to work with other people who experienced war or natural disasters. And so I started going to these places and began realizing everybody was having similar experiences. And it didn't matter what country or what culture they were from. We were all having similar experiences of a human species encountering death possibilities while on the planet, and that our bodies and our brains reacted in different ways when we encountered death as a living species. And I just became curious about it, so I started doing it all over the world.
That's wonderful. Let me ask you this question. It's a little bit esoteric, but what is your experience of the collective consciousness of an entire people who collectively experience a huge traumatic experience, like right now in the Gulf or
right.
The tsunami or whatever.
How do you
understand how that collective traumatic experience is manifested into the bigger scheme of things?
I've been charting
this
words, as
How to release that all of that trauma from the ethos.
Right. Okay. So I've been charting this only because it kept surfacing in people. What would happen is when I would work with people, they would begin to say to me, I think I'm having spiritual experiences around my trauma. That's how they would articulate it, for lack of a better term. And so I would ask them what those experiences were. And what really seemed to happen was that people who were able to resolve their trauma, and this is key to it, people who work through and resolve their trauma seem to develop a much greater energetic level of compassion for themselves and other people who are suffering on the planet. Those who were not able to resolve their traumas, for whatever reason, it was too painful or they didn't want to or they were too frightened of it, seemed to have the opposite experience. They would contract and become less compassionate. They would become angry and bitter and resentful about life. what I discovered is that if I could help people relieve their trauma in their bodies, their very nature was to become more compassionate people. And those who were not able to relieve the trauma, their very nature was to contract and become more isolated and bitter. What I recognize from this, and this is one of the reasons I continue to travel the world working in war zone and natural disaster zones, is my question became, if we could get 10,000 people to begin their own natural healing process, and that 10,000 people become more compassionate about the suffering of others on the planet, we might find that the trauma zones on the planet right now could be the very place where the compassionate zones of the planet may actually begin to evolve faster. So I think we have the potential of trauma going one of two ways, either into a more bitter, angry, defensive pattern, which would just create more generational trauma, which we have seen on the planet for many generations, or we are now at a place where we've recognized that if you heal trauma, we could get tens of thousands of people to actually become more compassionate, and that the very hot spots on the planet right now would be the very birthing places of a new social consciousness, if you will, of compassionate human beings on the planet.
Well, as they say, from your mouth to God's ears, let's hope that we can transmute trauma and violence into compassion and understanding. And soon, because we are definitely looking at a planet in a very tense and transitional state.
Yes, I think we might in fact be intensifying the trauma on this planet for the very purpose of seeing the potential transformation of energy that this can have for the human species and our consciousness if we choose to take it. That's the real issue.
And I'd like to throw out another idea, which is, in speaking of releasing trauma and reaching that place of tremors, I've often suggested to people that we just need to remember that these earthquakes that are happening are truly Earth as a conscious being releasing all of that imbalance and, why not, anger and emotion that she, too, is experiencing. And
well,
that those tremors may very well be. The earthquake may very well be what exactly you're talking about on the macrocosmic scale.
I think that's true, because here's the question. If we recognize at a deeper level, it's certainly in a level of physics, that we are vibrations on this planet as well, meaning human species. We're vibratory frequencies on the planet, and the planet itself is a vibratory frequency. When its frequency is disturbed, it begins to vibrate as a way of reorganizing itself back to homeostasis. I believe we do the same thing. So I think as a living organism, which the planet is, and we likewise are living organisms, we have not recognized how much in sync we actually are with the planet, or if you will, the planet is in sync with us, and it is responding to our vibrational frequency as much as we are responding to its vibrational frequency. And there's
absolutely
serious
readjustment.
We definitely
speak the same language, David. If people can really get around this and understand that consciousness creates reality, creates matter, we will be all the sooner on the way to restoring the balance on this beautiful blue-green planet.
Yeah, I think you're right. We just have to really recognize that we are cohabitating with a living organism, which we call planet Earth.
Indeed. I'll drink to that, too. David, we're about to reach the end of our program. Is there any one specific message that you would like to share with the people that are listening to you today?
Yeah, the last message I'd like to share is that if people are living under stress or anxiety because of all that's going on the planet today, if they're living under tension or fear, I absolutely believe that the human organism is trying to restore itself back to a calm state, and it has built in it the ability to do that. And if we do not allow this organism to restore itself back to its natural calm state, the only other thing it can do is begin to contract and withdraw. And that only can lead to unhappiness and a life of unpleasantry. But I believe every one of us, no matter how deep or difficult our traumas has been, our body absolutely wants to and knows how to restore itself. And I believe in the restoration process that the individual becomes more powerfully compassionate than they ever recognized that they were capable of becoming. And for that reason, it is worth exploring how to heal traumas, stress, and anxiety inside ourselves.
So true. And like you said earlier, the animals know how to do it. Let's let the animals remind us of how to be in a natural state.
Absolutely. If we go back to our nature, we'll be fine.
Mentality. All right. Thank you, David. For those of you who have been listening, you've been listening to David Burselli, Ph.D. He's the author of The Revolutionary Trauma Release Process. It's a great book. I'm reading through it now. If you relate to what you've heard today, go out and get this book and learn more about how to heal yourself from this process of internalizing trauma and truly blocking yourself from the ultimate experience of living in joy and harmony. All right, guys, I've got to sign out. It's been a great hour with you. Thank you so much, David.
And thank you, Patricia.
And keep up your wonderful, good global work helping people get help. There's so much need there out there, especially in those trauma zones. Thank you.
Thank
you again. Okay, everyone, it's a beautiful Saturday. I know it's Memorial Day in the United States. So be in peace, enjoy and celebration, and be in truth to yourself and to your body. Bye-bye. This is Patricia signing out from Beyond the Matrix.